From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. Brown water at a Tacoma school outrages parents and students. It should be green, they say. Green, right?
Sure.
It's the color that they're upset about.
They want to raise pansies who can't handle a little dirt in their water.
A new music venue has Carnation concerned. Spike just showed me the maps of the road.
In and out of, yeah, the potential.
There's enough space for, there's a horse and a buggy, and that's about it.
It's pretty close.
Trump, Speaker Johnson are going to hold a joint press conference on election integrity. And we all await with bated breath what's going on with Iran and Israel. Joining us is a man after my own heart, my boomer friend, Frank Shires. He's a local news guy, cartoonist. He's been in the news business, radio business, a very long time. Very important person with very important opinions and can tell you literally anything you want to know about the entirety of the state of Washington. For instance, he once pointed to a pine cone and he said, you see that there?
Yeah.
That's a pine cone that originally Jay Inslee looked at 30 years ago. It's been
That's
there ever
so
since.
Bad.
And set us
true.
On a course. To eliminate
us on a
freedom.
Course
that's
for eliminating it. Freedom.
That's right.
So that's news to me.
Hey, hi, Governor Inslee. So, Frank, we got a text from somebody in the last segment.
Mm.
It says, how do I get my 20-year-old son to obtain his news from somewhere other than social media? He feels that the United States of America is no longer a good country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Frank, you are a Washingtonian, born and bred.
Yes.
True American hero.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that the youths out there think that the United States is not a good country? Is it social media?
I'm sure that's a component of it. I think it's more likely that mommy and daddy have never spent any time teaching the little darling how to look at an article critically or to look at whatever media they're consuming and analyze it and say, okay, is this true? Is this not true? What, does this make sense? And unlike you, Mr. I need a study and I need it right now. I must have a study. I must.
I'm glad he feels that way.
Yeah, he does. It's good. But unlike you, most kids aren't trained that way. And unfortunately, they aren't taught that in high school.
Well, I was
a debate coach, okay, for years and also a competitor. And I used to take the beginning debate kids and I'd have like 30 or 40 or 50 kids in a class. And I'd stand up and say, I'm going to teach you something that you must memorize. These words, he who asserts must prove. And then there are these kinds of proof. And it was all about critical thinking. It was all about questioning whatever you saw. And unfortunately, with social media and media in general, people just go, okay. Oh, he said it must be true.
Frank, when I was in college, the other part of that mm-hmm. phrase that I often heard was that which is submitted without evidence can be dismissed without evidence.
I've never heard that, but it's absolutely true.
Right. So what I often see in debates, mm-hmm. Especially in our comment section on our YouTube channel, which you can go subscribe to right now.
Good plug.
Is that people will submit ideas with no evidence whatsoever.
Correct.
So, for instance, a guy, we were talking about how there was an armed guard at a Walgreens who was intimidating mm-hmm. people because mm-hmm. he had a bunch of guns and
a bunch of clips aplenty.
So this guy says in the comment section, he goes, this never happened under the Trump administration. So I went back in the Google machine and I typed in 2016 to 2020 and I said Walgreens armed guard and I found an article and I sent it to the guy and he goes, okay, one, but this only happened one time and that was in Florida. And so then I went back into the Google search
and pulled another one,
found three more and I put them down at the bottom and he goes, well, it doesn't even matter in the first place. And I go, so you're admitting that what I'm saying is, Frank, is that most people don't even know how to have a debate or a discussion because he should have conceded that point and said, oh, well, it's actually gotten much worse under Biden, and then he would have been accurate.
And we used to, when I would work with debate kids, one of the things they do is when they look at, say, a study, okay, it's not just enough to say, quote, a study. How many people were studied? What was the methodology? How long did it take? Was it longitudinal? All of that stuff never happens. So to bring it back to the news question that you asked me, I don't think we teach our kids how to critically analyze anything that they hear or see. And so in the world of AI, in the world of Marvel movies that look like, gee, Iron Man can fly,
right,
even though he violates all the laws of physics and then a few extras, they just buy it. And it's unfortunate.
I wish it was just our kids that were subject to this.
Oh, no. It's been going on for a long time.
It really is. I mean,
time.
I hate to point the fingers, but we have you know, Speaker of the House and the Republican nominee holding a joint press conference at Mar-a-Lago.
Uh-huh.
And they're talking about election integrity.
Well, anybody, and with all due respect, Spike, anybody who doesn't think that there was, let's just say, some irregularities in the 2020 election is just has their head in the sand. It's clear that there were irregularities.
Strong words, Frank Shires.
It's clear there were irregularities.
Call me an ostrich, Jack.
No, no.
Call me an ostrich.
See. Immediately they go for invective. I didn't
call
say.
Me an, my head in the sand, you said.
You think this man lays eggs?
You think I'm the fastest non-flight land bird in America? Don't you think, really?
You think that he can run upwards of 65 miles per hour?
I'm not sure. Depends on what's chasing him.
Oh.
Do you think this man participates in mating rituals by wrapping his neck around his partner? Come on, Frank.
If only I could.
Did right. I say but, Spike?
No, you did not. And I will. And it's not just me saying this. This election integrity press conference. Steve Bannon, former White House chief strategist,
yeah,
called this today theatrical.
Oh, this
says completely theatrical.
Of course it is.
Okay, so
but what did you expect? I'm
well,
sorry?
I expect,
did you think they'd do something, oh, well, let's all get together and we'll have this important conference
on... I would hope we could all expect that.
No! No! Politics, what do they call it? Politics is show business for ugly people. That's what it is.
Ugly Hollywood.
I thought radio was show business for ugly people, first off.
Okay.
Let's set up some boundaries here, pal. Come on.
But, it's no more... I mean, look at CNN. We've got VP Harris in Arizona to push for his abortion rights.
Frank,
that's
theater. Quickly.
It's all theater.
So you just said that yes. There were some things that happened within the 2020 election. And not to open up a can of worms,
okay,
but would you mind listing off two, maybe three, that you would point to?
Irregularities. Just irregularities.
Irregularities. Yeah,
irregularities. Golly. Well, we know that there were, there were a bunch.
Yeah.
Look, I didn't come prepared for this argument.
Okay, that's
but
okay.
I would recommend there are a number of books.
DeepState.com.
Molly Hemingway wrote a great book.
Infowars.com.
That talked about some irregularities. Let's Zuckerbucks. I mean, everybody knows that Zuckerbucks were roughly $450 million given to various organizations, state organizations around the country, primarily in battleground states.
Well, but you
gave them.
Don't
interrupt.
Frank, what I'm saying is that there's a reason why they did that, and it's not irregular. It's because Trump was campaigning on repealing Section 230. So it makes perfect sense why Facebook, Meta, as a company, would donate to the Democratic
but
Party.
But it wasn't a donation to the Democrat Party. It wasn't. It was a donation to individual election organizations. So, for example, they gave it to Green Bay, Wisconsin's election office, and they used money to get out the vote and collect ballots and all that
stuff. To just get out Democratic votes?
Yeah, yes. That as it ends
Please.
Up in the... I'm sorry, look at the analysis. Anybody read about
it. But Republicans collect ballots too, Fred. I mean, this, in the states
no.
That it's legal to do that.
You wanted an example. That's the biggest example I can give you.
But it's not a good one.
Well, that doesn't count. You wanted an example. If you're going to blow it up, then we're going to have to bring the actual evidence of what I'm talking about forward, and then you can analyze that.
Let's go have a steak and a beer.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
And we'll do it there. We'll have more fun and love each other.
You remember the one thing that was the water main breaking? Remember that the whole thing that happened during the 2020 election?
Water main?
The water in Georgia. Trying to make a segue here.
The roof collapsed.
Speaking of water causing a roof to collapse.
I remember the thing in Flint, Michigan.
That was.
Speaking of the water main breaking and washing out all those ballots, brown water at a Tacoma school. Outrages parents and students. Why is this? Because discolored water has been a problem since mid-February.
Mm-hmm.
Children now bring their own water bottles, and teachers have to go into their own pockets to give clean water to the kids because they're so worried about it. I'm very passionate about a very basic thing, which is that I think that all Americans are entitled to clean drinking water, which is why the Biden administration had the Clean Water, so on and so forth.
The Infrastructure Act.
The funding
they
to continue that.
Replace every old pipe in America.
So this is happening at Bernie Elementary School, and it's gross, but I just kind of want to contrast it with this. When I was a kid in elementary school, a similar thing happened. They fixed it in a couple of months. Is it worth getting all insane about? Not really. Do you know what I mean? Is it upsetting? Yes, but there's this crazy thing. I don't know if anybody's ever seen one of these. It's called a reusable water bottle. This is what it is. Yeah. A crazy man invented it, and it's got a lid on it, and I can fill it. And I've used this thing since September. It's an amazing invention. Thank you so much.
You know, I haven't had a kid in school, in elementary school, let alone the last time I was in elementary school when there was a Kennedy in the White House. That's when I was in elementary school. So do they still cook lunches? Are there still cafeterias and cafeteria ladies where they prepare large amounts of food in schools?
It depends on the district. They have a central kitchen, and then they ship the meals out and are warmed. And then in other districts, they have kitchens.
We've got brown water in one school, but we've probably got compromised water in many schools. And if they're cooking with this water, it's not just about a kid bringing a water bottle in. I mean, we should be investing in all of our infrastructure, whether it's roads, bridges, pipes, internet connections. You know, America has long ignored our own infrastructure to the detriment of every citizen in the country.
You're kind of ignoring, though, something that's been going on in this area for some time, which is there were schools that had lead in the piping,
yeah.
And they have across the last probably, gosh, I would guess 5 years, maybe more. They've gone through those schools
and removed it, done it.
And that's, by the way, consistent across. This little thing at Bernie is an anomaly.
Yeah.
I don't think it's worthy of any emotion. It's the district immediately moved.
I'm mad. It's Democrats, Frank.
Yeah, that's
Democrats
it.
Are ruining this country.
No,
they're trying to kill your kids.
It's Republicans that failed to make the money available to fix it.
Right,
of course,
exactly.
The money is available to fix it. And guess what? The district is going to fix it.
I'm going to blame the Dutch and their wooden shoes is what I'm going to do.
That's it. They're clogs.
So Carnation has a series of festivals going on, right?
Well, here's the thing. Remlinger Farms was announcing a concert series, and they tried this last summer. They had three shows out there, and this is in conjunction with the STG, Seattle Theater Group, about, you know, nice outdoor venues. Mm-hmm. Problem is, Carnation is on a two-lane road. 203 comes in and out of Carnation between Tolt and Duval. There's a little east side town of Carnation, and people are worried that this kind of crowd coming in on multiple weekends in a Carnation is going to make life a little harder for the little town people of Tolt or Carnation or even Duval, who have a simple little town lifestyle. And I can understand the concerns. If you go down to the show at the White River Amphitheater, allow yourself 2 hours for the show, 4 hours to get in, 4 hours to get
really?
Out.
Really? It's like that? I've always wondered how bad it was.
White River's pretty bad because it's a much larger venue than Remlinger Farms. But to push back against that, the folks out at Remlinger Farms and STG say, look, Remlinger Farms has their fall fest every year, and 6,000 people come a day.
Yeah, but they also say that 6,000 people a day, it's like across 12 hours. And you're talking about a group of people that are coming in.
Thank you. Not all coming in for 7 o'clock.
They're all coming at once. Right.
I just hate music festivals.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I was a musician for so many years,
yeah.
And I had to play them. And this is what happens at music festivals behind the scenes.
Oh, I want to hear this.
So what you do is they make you be there by a certain time because
sure.
They have to close the gate for the vans or the buses to come in and out. So they'll say you have to be here by 9 a.m.
Yeah. Okay.
Full stop. And then you have to have the security come in, check to make sure that everything is hunky-dory.
Sure, safety is important.
Make sure you don't have any firearms. And then you sit and you wait. For hours.
6-8 hours?
An unbelievable amount of time.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't even get to sound check because they go, oh, we'll do that all for you.
Really?
And yeah, what that means is that they take your roadies or your techs and they play your instruments and they do the leveling on your instruments. So you're not there. And then they give you or they use your in-ear monitors,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to what Bradley Cooper did in, what's the movie?
Oh, Star Is Born.
No, Star Is Born, yeah. Right. You have to wear in-ear monitors because you can't actually hear what the music, because it's so loud and the speakers are in front of you.
Right.
That pushed out to a big crowd. Yeah.
Without the in-ear monitors, it just sounds like white noise.
Okay.
You will
okay.
literally go deaf. And then you play and you basically have no idea if it went well, if it didn't go well, if the sound was good. But sometimes you do. And that's generally when something fails.
Yeah, when it's bad.
And that's when you know.
So I insisted for many years. I said, I'm not going to be using a lav system. I'm not going to be using it. I'm going to be hard into my amps every time. I had a 30-foot cable that went right into my amps.
Lab's a wireless for folks at home,
Yeah, basically, it's just a wireless little, and it's a wireless connection that goes into your amp. Every time I said, I'm not going to do it. These venues insist that you do it for technical reasons. Mine was, I got the cord. It's 30 feet long. It goes into my pedal board. Pedal board goes into the amps. No big deal. You got to use the wireless. The one time I use it, what happens? Cuts out. It's trash. I hate festivals. I don't go to them. It's nothing but PTSD.
So does this mean on this basis that you're against what's going on at Remlinger
100%.
Farms?
Cancel all outdoor music festivals.
What did you tell me was next door?
You know, it's interesting. I don't think you were out of the room. This potential concert venue, yeah. So there is only one neighbor that is immediately adjacent to Remlinger Farms, the main complex, and roughly where this big stage is going to be. Mm-hmm. Do you know what it is, Jack?
No.
It is one of, I don't know, maybe three or four Western Washington Girl Scout camps. And it's a big one.
Right. Let's bring in the metal bands.
It's a big one.
Yeah.
It's Camp River Ranch. Laura went.
Wow. I sure did.
Alumni. Wow.
Yes.
Look at that.
I could probably not recite the Girl Scout promise for you right now.
About 10 cabins, I think, at least.
Yeah, and heated with plumbing as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it's very nice.
They have water features.
Yes.
It's a huge property.
Huge, huge camp. And it's literally, you go by the Remlinger Farm barns, you go around the corner, you go maybe a tenth of a mile, and bang, you're in Camp River Ranch. And then it climbs up the hill. So if you want to avoid the sound of that concert, not if you're at Camp River Ranch, because you're going to be up on top of the hill.
You're sitting around a campfire with guitars, and all you can hear is guar.
So I had a gig where this happened. I was playing an outdoor festival that was an amphitheater.
Yeah.
Like 5,000 people who were all overnight camping 3 days.
Yeah.
So when you're on the stage, you look up into basically everybody's campsites.
Yeah.
The really cool gig. And when we get there, the guy who was putting it on said, you guys, this is the third time I've been able to do this. The only way that my neighbors let me do this, I mean, everybody who was around this 10 acres of property, said, please no swearing on stage. Can you guys please no swear words, no cussing?
Did you do it?
Well, thanks, Frank.
I'm sorry.
Stories have tension.
I'm listening.
Frank, stories have tension and build up. So we are like the third band on, which means that we have to wait 3 hours before we get to go on.
Yeah.
And what do you do if you're a 25-year-old Jack Stein for 3 hours? A lot of boozing, a lot of drinking. Maybe you start talking a little looser than usual.
Sure.
I get up on that stage and I immediately go full sailor mode. I mean, words out of my mouth. I just do a screed that I am so glad that nobody caught it on camera, because I was oblivious to, I was so loaded. And then about 30 minutes through the set, one of the techs comes up to the side of the stage and motions over to me, and he says, you have to stop swearing. And I went, oh, my bad. And then I go to the microphone and I said, I'm not supposed to bleeping swear, you guys. It was so embarrassing.
Oh, wow.
And I regret that. And I cringe every time I think about it, every time it floats into my brain.
I think we're getting a call in. I think it's from Remlinger Farms. They're wondering if you can appear.
Can you play next to the Girl Scout camp?
Yeah.
By the way, they said they're going to stand at the perimeter by the property boundaries with like decimal meters. And they're
going to need them.
They will keep the sound below 50 decibels at the edge of the property so it doesn't intrude upon campfire time over at the Girl Scout camp.
And we haven't mentioned the fact that the city of Carnation, basically the city council as well as the mayor, they're in favor of this. This is a big thumbs up.
Well, sure, it's going to bring money into town.
Yeah,
3, 4, 5, 7 times a year.
Yeah. Shires Creative is where you can find all of Frank's work. He is a cartoonist, published in how many papers, Frank?
As of today, a new one, so it'll be a dozen.
Congratulations.
And,
and if you've never seen Frank's cartoons, they are very clever in their use of word and imagery, because they're usually just single panel.
Are you political cartoons for the most part?
Yeah, no, I am, totally.
Both political cartoons. Political cartoons, one of the most effective ways in American history.
Well, it's also
to inform a population.
So difficult, because you have to encapsulate a lot of ideas in a little 3x4 square.
Which doesn't explain why I do it.
It's
a complete mystery. How does this happen? I will take a really quick break when we get back. An interest in ethical non-monogamy is a thing in Seattle. According to Axios, we shall discuss at great length, because this is weird, when we get back right after this. We have a YouTube YouTube channel where we release digital exclusive content. It's a spicy meatball, as the kids like to say. Generally, Spike and I go to fisticuffs within the first 30 seconds. Usually, Laura, that's the way it breaks down, right? Spike and I just make hard eye contact in complete and total silence. Laura says, guys, are you going to say anything? We rip off our shirts, and then we run at each other, and we just fight for 8 minutes. That's what you see on the YouTube channel, right?
Yes.
Perfect.
We have to go back and add the sound later. It's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, we have to go back over and do
fake a conversation.
ADR is what they call it in the business. We have to do a voiceover work on that. So speaking of conflict, by the way, in relationships, interest in ethical non-monogamy is a thing in Seattle. Now, if you've ever heard of what ethical... No, what accent is that? Ethical.
Ethical.
Ethical. What? Suddenly.
Friends. Have you fallen into your televangelical? They call it ethical non-monogamy. We call it sin.
I call it sin is what sin. I call it.
It's evil. The devil's playroom.
Anytime I think about ethical non-monogamy, I just go in the back and get my snakes. I hold them up to the devil is what
Save
I
Save them all, Lord.
Save them, children out there. So polyamory is a thing. Polyamory is a thing that these kids are engaging in. That's the devil was polyamorous. Poly meaning many. Amorous meaning lover.
Love
in the Latin prefix. But Latin is the language of the devil. So polyamory
and
is
Pope. Ironically enough, and the Pope. Which makes me wonder.
Is a Pope not polyamorous? You heard me say it. I'll say it at this whole time. What did Speaker Johnson say? I don't mean to get a little creepy on y'all, but a little bit of that Baptist in me is what I'm talking about, Speaker Johnson. Look like Harry Potter. God talks to me.
Look, I'm a Southern Baptist. I don't want to get too spooky on
not
you.
Not at all.
But, you know.
Hold on. Okay. My son just looked at some pornography. Hold on. Got to text him. Put that down. Send.
So, polyamory doesn't always work out for long term. So basically what it means is you have multiple partners who know about your other partners. And they might talk to your other partners. They might not talk to your other partners. But the idea is that you are okay with your partner being, let us just say, romantic, mm-hmm. sometimes platonically, mm-hmm. sometimes not platonically, with other people. And you communicate about it in a very open and emotionally way.
Safe,
mature way.
Mature. Thank you, Laura.
Yeah. I know of couples who have dallied in this arena of polyamory, mm-hmm. and what's the word? The consensual, ethical.
Ethical.
I don't know anybody who it's worked for.
Because it's filled with sin is what it is.
Well, it's what it's filled with is jealousy. What it's filled with is self-doubt. And I know it's anecdotal, and I've known three different couples. Two of them are no longer together.
Wow.
From having to live this, trying to live this way.
Laura, do you know any polyamorous people out there? You know any polyamorous couples out there?
Yes, and they're very healthy.
Wow!
Yeah, as far as anyone can know anything about someone else's relationship.
Right, and my experiences have been decades ago. So I don't know. This is about younger people, about how they look at relationships.
Polyamory. The idea behind it is that, like, let us say that your partner is experiencing feelings of jealousy. The idea is that you talk about it, right? And so you work around that jealousy. It's about the idea of not being possessive over your partner.
Yeah, it's also about the commitment you've made to your partner, make sure they are the priority in your life. And I think when you're polyamorous, you sometimes, you only have so much love, attention, devotion, time to give somebody. And if you're giving it somewhere else,
it's more like this. I've known many polyamorous couples, and the way that they kind of break it down to me is that their partner fulfills a certain amount of their needs, whether mm-hmm. they're emotional, intellectual, sexual, whatever it might be. But they might not fill all of them. So then they go to somebody else to fulfill the rest of those emotional needs, the remainder of the 25%.
Okay.
And the way that people navigate that often is that they have hard rules. Like, this is our house, meaning you don't bring partners over to this house. Mm-hmm. Or they have other rules. Like, I don't want you coming home and me having to smell juicy couture when you come walking through the door.
Yeah, I hear you.
There's a lot of different ways that people navigate this. I think the shortfall comes from when one person is like, yeah, let's be poly. And then the other person is saying, no, I don't want to do this. And then the other partner's, yeah, let's try that. This will be great or whatever.
And then I want you to be happy. So I guess we have to try that. Or you won't be happy until we do try that. You start sacrificing what you want. Yeah.
Right. So it has to be with all parties who are fully engaged with it. I have read horror stories from people who have been married for 8 years, and then the husband or the wife says, I'm thinking about maybe seeing having a boyfriend, having a girlfriend on the side, and then the original partner, thinking that their covenant before God is being disrupted, they then end up ending that relationship, which is really quite very sad. So it's not all about physical impulses. Sometimes it's about emotional impulses.
But yeah, that's a great point, because I got to tell you, as I listen to your definition of the very different dynamics that can make up a relationship, I can tell you that the truly unpleasant Mrs. O'Neill has friends, guy friends, who that she has known and cared for since she was a little kid. She's got a really dear friend who's going through, is new to, I don't want to make to me, guy's new to sobriety, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that they never dated, but they're always kind of, you know, they grew up together. And Melissa will go over there on a regular basis to spend time with the guy, check in with the guy, make sure the guy is, you know, they go and they do work out in his yard together, things like that. And I have no problem with that. I have no problem at all with that. And I'm not sure that I know that she is helping him get through a tough time.
That's more of a healthy relationship, right? But like Polly would be if she started dating that guy.
Yeah, they're not going to go camping up in Lake Wilderness together. And Melissa wouldn't, you know, the truly unpleasant knows that their boundaries are respect.
Right. So that's a pretty healthy monogamous relationship. But Polly would be, you know, if she was receiving some kind of, I'll give you a quick example. Good friend of mine, he's got his primary partner who he loves very much, and yet at the same time he has another partner in his life who they do not have physical relations. They do cuddle and they do kiss, but they don't do any, you know, do any of that gross stuff.
I hear you.
But they do sleep together, and so but there's a certain emotional fulfillment that they get by meeting 3 or 4 times a month and engage in watching movies and cooking for each other, whatever it is. And they seem to have a fairly healthy dynamic there, understanding where the boundaries are. I think the problem with a lot of this is that people don't know how to, not in every case, but there's a difference between being polyamorous and just wanting to have an open relationship. And those two things are not the same thing. Yeah. And then on top of all that, I think that a lot of people don't learn in polyamory, unfortunately, how to adapt to more of their partner's needs, because they just acquiesce and they say, well, I simply don't do those things. You go do those things with your other partner.
Fair enough. Right? You know, there's an app that you can help if you're curious about being in a positive, polyamorous, consensual...
Polycule,
yeah.
Polycule.
A thruple, they're calling them
nowadays. No, a thruple's a different thing.
Thruple's a different thing. I don't know.
Yeah. The thruple is when your girlfriend's girlfriend is also your girlfriend, and you are their boyfriend.
It's like a bar stool of love. 3 legs, right? So nobody falls over. Does that make sense?
It's kind of weird. Laura, do you have warm feelings towards it or not so much?
I feel pretty neutral about it. I think if it works for people and they're communicating, great. But you got to make sure it works for you and you're communicating.
That's sweet.
That's the smartest way to look at it, man.
The O.J. Simpson white Bronco is now a museum piece in Tennessee. You know, I guarantee in 75 years, people are just going to look at it like it's a white Bronco. Can I tell you why?
Why?
Because I got evidence for this.
Okay.
I'll tell you when we get back right after this. O.J. Simpson's white Bronco is now a museum piece in Tennessee, which you can go see for some strange and odd reason. Do you think the cell phone is still in there?
I don't know.
From the 90s? Remember the cell phones from the 90s?
They were the bricks. You bet. They were in a box on the console. Yep.
Laura, did you ever see one of these? This is from before your time. This is from the before times.
Tell me about the before times.
In the before times, you had a cell phone in your car that was in a box or like a leather case.
Oh, I've heard tell of this.
Yeah.
I've used one.
And you would take them out and then you would flip up the antenna manually.
Oh, you had to actually extend... antenna. Oh,
yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. And then it was connected to the box by a wire. And then you would talk to whomever using that phone. Isn't that crazy?
This is before all our texting and driving laws.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
one hand on the wheel.
The Simpson white Bronco is, it's a famous piece of history. But when I think about it, what's weird about this is that if you just walked into it and it was on a lot, it would just be a Ford Bronco.
Sure.
No one would think anything about it. But because something happened inside of it, all of a sudden it is imbued with meaning. I'll give you a really quick example. There is a bowler hat that's in a museum in the UK. Actually, it's at the Smithsonian.
Okay.
And it's Winston Churchill's bowler hat that he wore.
Yeah.
Do you know how many times he actually wore it? Twice. It doesn't really have any meaning, but because he graced it with his presence 2 times, his estate donated it to the Smithsonian, and now they have it on display.
Well, it's funny, now they have, like, O.J., the Bronco is, like you said, just a Bronco. And hopefully someday it'll just be a Bronco. It's not like Bonnie and Clyde's car that's riddled with bullet holes, right?
Yeah, it's not like that.
I mean,
yeah.
I got to tell you, when I was maybe 10 years old, a local mall in Maryland near our home brought one of Hitler's staff cars on tour. And it was on display at the mall. And they brought it in to draw people into the mall out of curiosity. It was a, you know, bring people into the mall attraction. Okay, but this was like a big old, you know, Mercedes-Benz. I think it's a 7K or some 770K or something like that. You know, the big long extended Roland fenders, big front grille. I mean, you could, it was from a bygone era.
How did Mercedes get away with the whole Nazi thing? Hugo Boss.
You know where they're made?
Yeah, where?
In Germany.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how do we just still have these companies around that Nazis? You know what I'm saying? It's just kind of
Volkswagen
weird...
started with the Third Reich.
That's
right?
What I'm talking about. Yeah. The people wagon. Yeah. So how come we have all these companies that somehow are able to like skate by the whole? Yeah, we helped out the Nazis thing, right? That's kind of a weird.
Yeah, we also offer low gas mileage, and affordability. And by the way, there's a '68 Beetle that belonged to Ted Bundy sitting right next to OJ's Bronco.
Yeah.
At this museum of creepiness.
That's what I'm talking about. It's just weird, our fixation with these random items. I do think, though, I have an exception to my crassness about this. Instruments are an entirely different aspect of an object.
Okay.
So, for instance, they had a Stevie Ray Vaughan's Telecaster.
The SRV?
Is it? Not the SRV.
Oh, that's a Strat.
They had Jimbo, the Telecaster, at the Museum of Pop Culture.
At MoPop. Yeah.
So you could walk down and you could see it. And that's what he played all throughout Austin, Texas for his first however many years before he switched over to the Strat. And it's such an interesting piece just to look at, because you can see all the sweat and the paint chips and how he carved Jimbo into the back of it.
Cool.
It's really cool. Ford Bronco... not the same thing.
Not so much. We have such a fascination with the macabre. Is it macabre?
It's just the dark. Laura, have you ever seen it? Have you gone out of your way to see something that you thought was interesting or cool or a historic thing?
Julia Child's kitchen in D.C., which was very cool. She has a Pike Place market magnet on her fridge.
I heard it smells like sulfur in there.
Awful, man.
It smells like sulfur, and there's a woman who wears a red robe who guides you around Julia Child's things. Spike, you ever go out of your way to see anything weird?
You know me, dude. I live for that kind of stuff. But I can tell you that the day I wouldn't take a 20-minute detour to take my wife to see the actual General Lee from the Dukes of Hazzard. The truly unpleasant Miss O'Neill is still mad at me to this
day.
I'm
mad at you, Spike.
Been 20 years
it's
since
It's General Lee.
I know. We were supposed to meet her aunt for dinner, and we were running late in the middle of nowhere, Virginia, by Manassas, Virginia. And there was the General Lee, and I wouldn't stop.
Them Duke boys are at it again. Andrew A+, Nate Connors. Dang,
yeah,
dude.
I know.
I don't even know how to start, Nate.
Yeah, well.
Is that a fitted Cairo Radio polo?
Yeah, it is. Short sleeve.
Nate, I got to talk to HR because that's not workplace appropriate, my friend. That is. You are killing it over there. You've been working out, Nate Connors? Those guns, my friend.
Hey, man, when the sun's out, guns out.
I'd go to a mall to see Nate's shirts on display. I would.
The man's like a walking fashion person. Laura, A+. Spike, I'll give you a solid C+. Today.
Thanks,
did
buddy.
A fine job. Here, my friends. It's your quote of the day.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Call me an ostrich, Jack.
No.
Call me an ostrich.
See.
Immediately
they go for invective. I didn't say.
My head in the sand, you said.
You think this man lays eggs?
You think I'm the fastest non-flight land bird?